let us get straight into our scripture reading this morning. And our scripture reading is coming from John chapter 19, verses 1 to 7 and 17 to 30. Then Pilate took Jesus and had him flogged. The soldiers twisted together a crown of thorns and put it on his head. They clothed him in a purple robe and went up to him again and again, saying, "Hail, King of the Jews," and they slapped him in the face. Once more Pilate came out and said to the Jews gathered there, "Look, I'm bringing him out to you to let you know that I find no basis for a charge against him." When Jesus came out wearing the crown of thorns and the purple robe, Pilate said to them, "Here is the man." As soon as the chief priests and their officials saw him, they shouted, "Crucify! Crucify!" But Pilate answered, "You take him and crucify him. As for me, I find no basis for a charge against him." The Jewish leaders insisted, "We have a law, and according to that law, he must die, because he claims to be the Son of God." So the soldiers took charge of Jesus, and carrying his own cross, he went out to the place of the skull, which in Aramaic is called Golgotha. There they crucified him, and with him two others, one on each side, and Jesus in the middle. Pilate had a notice prepared and fastened to the cross. It read, "Jesus of Nazareth, the King of the Jews." Many of the Jews read this sign, for the place where Jesus was crucified was near the city, and the sign was written in Aramaic, Latin, and Greek. The chief priests of the Jews protested to Pilate, "Do not write the King of the Jews, but that this man claims to be King of the Jews." Pilate answered, "What I have written, I have written." When the soldiers crucified Jesus, they took his clothes, dividing them into four shares, one for each of them, with the undergarment remaining. This garment was seamless, woven in one piece from top to bottom. "Let's not tear it," they said to one another. "Let's decide by lot who will get it." This happened that the scripture might be fulfilled that said, "They divided my clothes among them and cast lots for my garment." So this is what the soldiers did. Near the cross of Jesus stood his mother, his mother's sister Mary, the wife of Clopas, and Mary Magdalene. When Jesus saw his mother there and the disciple whom he loved standing nearby, he said to her, "Woman, here is your son." And to the disciple, "Here is your mother." From that time on, this disciple took her into his home. Later, knowing that everything had now been finished, and so that scripture would be fulfilled, Jesus said, "I am thirsty." A jar of wine vinegar was there, so they soaked the sponge in it, put the sponge on the stalk of the hyssop plant, and lifted it to Jesus' lips. When he had received the drink, Jesus said, "It is finished." And with that, he bowed his head and gave up his spirit. A while back, I read a quote attributed to Louis Giglio that said, "Mere nails, though pounded deep, were not enough to keep Jesus on the cross. But the love was, and love prevailed." You see, it doesn't even matter what size and how deep that nails was driven into Jesus' hands and his feet. It doesn't even matter that it was the size of railroad spikes. That is not what kept Jesus on that cross. I mean, we have his resume from his days on earth. We know what he did. He was powerful enough to heal people, to raise people from the dead, to multiply food. He was powerful enough to just climb off that cross. He even had the encouragement to do that. There were people mocking him, saying, "Get off if you can." And he was powerful enough to get off. But he had a bigger reason to stay on there. His love for us. And in the Narnia clip that we watched, this was actually referenced. Even the White Witch started to think about this when she said, "So much for love." She knew he was doing it out of love. They were all scared of Aslan. And now he was just lying there at their mercy. She mocked him. "So much for love." But she knew he was doing it out of love. But I think there's not many people that was actually present at the crucifixion that really understood it at the time. I really don't think a lot of people understood it at the time. That Jesus chose to stay on that cross because he loved us. His Father understood that because he shares that great love for us. But I think one of the few people that actually understood and that was present was Jesus' mother, Mary. And she was there at the cross all the time. But she also knew right from the beginning, from Jesus' birth, who he was and what he was going to do. She knew who he actually was. She knew how powerful he was. She knew what was his ability. And now she was the one sitting there watching him choose to rather suffer, to rather be tortured, to rather stay hanging on the cross. And she knew this was coming. She knew this was to happen. Because it was prophesied. But it still felt like her soul was being ripped from her. And along with this, she had all this noise, this symphony of noise of the crowd mocking her son. She saw the blood spatter on the rocks, on the pavement, leading all the way up the hill to Golgotha. She saw the blood dripping from the cross. She saw the abuse. It was evident that he has been abused, that he has been flogged, that he has been beaten. The cloth on his back was soaked by blood because of all of this. She saw this. She heard the pounding of the hammer as the nails were driven into his hands. And she saw the pain on his face with every pounding of the hammer. And her own face reciprocated that pain. And for long she stood there while the blood was dripping off and hitting on the cross. She couldn't do anything. Because she knew what Susan Bennison knew in the Narnia movie. He must have known what he was doing. He chose to do that out of love. And even while he was suffering, hanging on the cross, he still chose to think about other people. He was thinking about his mother being alone. So he looked at John and he said, "Take care of my mom." And looked at his mother and said, "There's your son. Let me take care of him." Amidst all this pain, all this humiliation,
because it was so thinking about someone else.
And Mary stayed until he died. It didn't take that long. And she was somewhat relieved. Because no man needs to have that much strength. No man deserves to have that much strength. So she was probably relieved when he died. But I guess one thing that she will remember forever is his last words. Because those are the things we do remember, people's last words. And she remembering his last words. It is done. It is finished. Now the New Testament uses seven different words when it's describing the meaning of Jesus' death on the cross. In the letters of Paul, in the Gospels, it uses seven different words. And each one of these seven words gives us a deeper understanding of what the crucifixion means. And we need all of those to give us the richest possible understanding we can do. One of the words it uses is ransom, which is a price paid to achieve someone's freedom. And the emphasis falls on the idea of being freed and not on the nature of the price. It also uses the word justification, being put right with God, as if declared by a court of law to be in the right now. It uses the word salvation, because the basic idea of salvation is deliverance or rescue from a dangerous situation. And the word can also suggest restoration to wholeness and healing. But it also uses the word redemption, the basic idea of buying back, or in the case of a slave, to buy freedom for that slave. The New Testament also uses the word reconciliation, to repair a broken relationship. God reconciled us to Him. He acts to restore a friendship. And then He invites us to respond to His initiative. It also uses the word adoption, to make us legal children of God. And faith brings about a change in our status from outsider to family member. But the last one, of course, that the New Testament used to describe the meaning of the crucifixion is for forgiveness. And this can be seen in two ways. In legal or financial terms, forgiveness is like cancellation of a debt, but also in terms of personal relationship. Forgiveness means the setting aside of personal hurt inflicted on you, setting aside of injury that you inflicted on you. And this is how the Bible, the New Testament, speaks about the meaning of the cross. As a ransom, as justification, to deliver us through salvation, as a redemptive act, an act of reconciliation, as adoption, and as forgiveness. And for this whole full meaning, this rich meaning of all seven of these words that the Bible uses to describe the meaning of the cross, for all of that, Jesus says, in his last words before he dies, it is done. It is finished. All of these things I have accomplished right now. This is what I came here to do. And the cross helps us to understand God better
Because we get to understand, we learn two very important attributes of God. Because the cross shows God's righteousness, it shows that He is just, but it also shows His love. God is very serious about sin. He hates sin. And He is just and righteous and fair. And therefore, He needs to deal with sin. He needs to punish sin. And He gets angry at sin because sin hurts the people He loves. So Jesus is a judge who condemns according to Matthew 25. But also the judge who loves and bestows the sinners so much that He chose to die for them. And when God forgives us, He doesn't simply wipe away sin and pretend that it never existed. He teaches us throughout the New Testament that sins are taken care of through the death of Jesus Christ. Sin has serious consequences. Consequences that we can see in the cross of Jesus Christ. It cost Jesus pain and shame and death to deal with sin, to buy restoration, and with the other six terms we need to describe the act of salvation. God needed to punish us, but now He is done.